This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries ending your season? With Best Ball on DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest Best Ball contest ever and get your entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing Best Ball, download the DraftKings app and use the code SHARP. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest today and draft your team today. Each week, you'll automatically rack up the points from all your scores. No ads, no drops, trades, or I should have played them instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app, use the code SHARP, and start playing Best Ball today. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued as $10 DK dollars. Age of eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Welcome back in. It is Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw. Brian Ortega here as well. One more thing I want to just get your thoughts on here, because you mentioned Bosa as the edge rusher. That would be the one who gets paid.
Yeah.
The interesting thing would be now Chris Jones is the one who's up. Interior player, able to get pressure from the inside for Kansas City. That's the next domino that's going to be interesting to fall, because Kansas City, they've been able to maneuver the cap very well with being able to pay Mahomes as much money as they do and keep Travis Kelce around. Yes, they had to trade Tyreek Hill, but we saw how much that impacted them last year with them winning the Super Bowl. Jones is the guy who's up that it's going to be interesting to see. Because he is the best player in that Kansas City defense, and he is a guy they do need to find a way to pay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Jones, in the final year of a contract, will be a free agent. He'll be 29 years old, actually be 30 going into the contract next year, Jeff. So interesting scenario here if you're looking at it from a Kansas City perspective. Look, the last three seasons, he's gotten paid pretty well. So I think he'll be okay, but the big thing is Kansas City willing to break the bank for him? It depends on the type of season he has right now. As I mentioned, he'll be 30 next year. And this is a guy that's coming off of a pretty decent contract, 4 years, $80 million with $60 million guaranteed. So you're looking at something probably even bigger for Jones in the, you know, he's probably going to go for a four-year deal somewhere about $110 million at that point in time.
Again, Quinnen Williams signing earlier today, 4 years, $96 million, $66 million of that $96 guaranteed for the Jets defensive tackle. Don't worry, we'll get more football throughout the show. Also, 15 minutes from now, former MLB catcher Eric Kratz going to join the show. So we'll get his thoughts on some second half stuff along with what we have for you right now. And Amal, the two Western divisions are tight. Every race in baseball this year is within five games except for the Braves' demolition derby of the NL East right now. But going to the NL West, we'll start in the NL West first. So the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Los Angeles Dodgers are tied going into the second half.
Right.
Dodgers technically percentage points ahead of Arizona. San Francisco 2.5 games clear of them. Padres 8.5 back. Forget the Rockies. They stink. The Dodgers are minus 230. Diamondbacks are 4-1. Giants are 6-1. Padres are 22-1 to win the division. You know, Amal, I will say this. I do think the Dodgers end up winning this division. In the end, they have the most talent. They have the most consistent play. But I don't think they should be that price. I don't think they should be minus 230. I think they should be closer to a minus 150 range. And Arizona and San Francisco both should be a little bit shorter than they are right now.
Well, first of all, don't injure yourself going out on that limb with the Dodgers winning the division.
Oh, hey.
Second.
Got him.
And second, look, I hear what you're saying. I don't think the Diamondbacks are winning this division. Merrill Kelly got injured. I mean, he'll be back, but still, that's a loss. The Giants are playing extremely well, but the Dodgers' depth is what is starting to take over. And remember, they're doing this without Urias being at full strength. Gonsolin has struggled until the last start against the Angels. And you see this team with Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts really coming on. Now, there are some other issues within that lineup, but overall, this team is dangerous. And that doesn't mean the Dodgers are done at the deadline. This is the team that could potentially acquire Shane Bieber or Corbin Burns. I would not be surprised at all if the Dodgers potentially get both of those guys or someone else that you might like that's a pitcher that's available. LA's not done. Remember, they have not had Blake Trinan in the back of the bullpen. This team has had some challenges, but to me, they're still the best team. I mean, it took to 89 games. They finally got here. They were kind of sluggish throughout. I think the Giants have a better shot of winning this division than the Diamondbacks do. I think the Giants finish ahead of the Diamondbacks because the pitching has been great. Duvall's been lights out in the back of that bullpen for San Francisco. The Padres are not going to be able to make much noise in terms of the division, but I still think the Padres are a pretty intriguing bet to win the NL pennant. They're not out of this thing. They've got a ton of talent. Blake Snell and Joe Musgrove over the last month have been the two best pitching teammates in baseball. It's not even close. Snell's been the best pitcher in baseball over about the last 9 to 10 starts.
Padres right now, 25-1 to win the pennant. To just flat out just get in the dance, they're 3-1.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the wild card standings in the National League right now. The three wild cards are Miami, Arizona, and San Francisco. The Phillies are a half game along with Milwaukee behind San Fran. The Padres are six games back. They're the next closest currently, team number 9 in the National League. Now, Amal, look, I think either the Mets or the Padres, one of those two teams that had sky-high expectations going into the season, one of them is at least going to be in this thing the last week of the season. I lean towards San Diego because the Mets schedule is much more difficult. And the Padres, as you mentioned, the frontline starting pitching is younger, has been more consistent, and has been better than the Mets frontline. The Padres at 3-1. I wish I was getting a little bit more than 3-1 to make the postseason, because I really do think when we get to that final week of the season, either San Francisco or Arizona is holding off San Diego, or even Miami. One of those teams is trying desperately to hold off San Diego for that final spot.
Yeah, first of all, I don't think the Mets are going anywhere. Even though they played well down the stretch a little bit, I still think they're a long way from being in contention. If you look at the Padres right now, great opportunity. You open the post-All-Star situation in Philadelphia on the road. You're going to have Musgrove. You're going to have Snell pitch. If you can come out of Philly and take 3 out of 4 games, they're in great shape. They do have a daunting schedule to open. You're at Toronto as well and then at Detroit on the road. But then you get the Pirates. You have the Rockies coming up after that. They'll have 4 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Diamondbacks, and then an additional 4. So, and the Marlins for 3 more, the Brewers. Look, if they're going to make it, the Padres have got to beat the teams. They've got all these people head-to-head in front of them. They've got some great opportunities here. We're going to find out before we even get to September where the San Diego Padres are. They're either going to be in this thing with a great shot or they're going to be far out of it, just depending on how the next 4 weeks plays out for them.
So, you're 100% right. And also, too, Amal, the one thing with the Padres that's a little bit funky here, with all the money they have in Machado and Tatis, in Darvish, Soto could be on the block if they don't get back into this over the next few weeks. Snell is a free agent this upcoming offseason. He could be on the block. So that's one of the other tricky things with San Diego, where if they go to Philadelphia, let's say Philly does the sweeping, and the Padres are all of a sudden 8 games under 500. Then the Padres find themselves in a very weird position, again, of all these high expectations, but probably having to be sellers.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Then I think Juan Soto could potentially be on the move, and as well as Blake Snell. And I think Blake Snell would be a great trade potentially to somebody in the American League. I think there's a lot of teams that could use someone like him. To me, the American League is wide open, so there's some opportunities there for sure. Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what the Padres end up doing. See, to me, the better bet on the Padres right now is to win the pennant at 25-1. They're probably not going to be able to win the division. Too far back, too many teams to leapfrog. If they make the playoffs, which is 3-1, which is not a bad bet, but at 25-1, remember what we saw last year? They got in the postseason, and all of a sudden they got there. They caught fire. This team with Musgrove and Snell right now, with Hader on the back end of the bullpen, they're sitting at 43-47, not an ideal record with 72 games remaining. But Jeff, if this team can play, you know, close to, let's say 57-58% ball, that's a pretty big number, but still overall that's projecting out somewhere in the mid-90s in terms of wins. And I think that's what they were around before the season started. I think they have an opportunity to be able to get into the postseason.
And then on the American League side, real quick, Amal, the AL West, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. The Rangers are only 2 games clear of Houston.
Yeah.
Everything went right for Texas in the first half. And Houston dealt it with an avalanche of injuries and inconsistent starting pitching, and yet here we are with the Astros only two games behind Texas going into the All-Star break. The Astros are the favorite at minus 115 in the division. It really feels like this is Houston's to lose with only being two games back going into the second half.
Yeah, the Rangers have played tremendously well. However, Houston, as you alluded to, they have not played well. Framber's been outstanding, of course. But to me, the concern is I think the Houston Astros are exactly who they are this year. I think the Rangers have a great shot to win this division. I would rather take the Rangers at plus 135. And you've had so many opportunities throughout May and June to get the Rangers at better odds. And the reason why I bring that up is all you had to do is potentially if the Astros struggle a little bit, you can come back with the Stros at a plus money price here eventually.
When we come back, we're going to bring in former Major League Baseball catcher Eric Kratz. We'll get his thoughts on what he expects to see in the second half and the importance of coming out of the break with the right mental state of mind. That's next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are a lot of different sounds that you might hear. Drive too fast and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, sound of ambulances and first responders desperately trying to free you from the wreckage. You could hear the beeps of a heart monitor. You could hear the doctors and nurses in an emergency room as you're being treated for your injuries. You could hear the sound of worried family members in the hospital waiting room hoping you're okay. You could even hear sound of people crying at a funeral. Because if you drive over the speed limit, whether by a lot or by a little, you could do damage that's beyond repair. You could seriously injure yourself, or worse, you could hurt or even kill someone. When you speed, you put everyone on the road at risk. One way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. Welcome back in. It is Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw. Brian Ortega's here as well. We're going to go to Summer League in the next segment. Danielle Alvari over at Thomas and Mack Center are set over there. She'll join us, get some thoughts on the first half of the WNBA season. All-Star game in Vegas on Saturday at Mandalay Bay. Also, her thoughts on some NBA off-season big picture things as well. Amal, let's go to the NFL though, and you know we're gonna let Ortega hop in here because he's the one who created this segment. So better, worse, or the same? And this might as well to me, Brian, just been mentioned as better or worse. Because
fine,
I think you have a better or worse for all these. And Brian, wherever you want us to start. Want us to start with your Green Bay Packers?
Yeah, so let's jump into it. So this is better, worse, or the same. So essentially, this is teams that have had maybe a change in terms of the front office, the coaching staff, or even players on the field. So we'll start with the obvious one, the Green Bay Packers. They now have Jordan Love behind center. He's been there for a couple of years. So, and we've seen him a little bit in action. We saw him against the Kansas City Chiefs when Aaron Rodgers had to sit out a game because of COVID. And then we also saw him against the Eagles in garbage time where he looked like, you know, the reincarnation of Joe Montana, if you ask anybody who covers the Packers. And this is my question to you. Do you think the Packers will be better, worse, or the same this season?
So their win total is 7.5. Their divisional odds is plus 475. I've said this a few times. So I go through, look through every single game, do it multiple times during the summer before I do my official one at the end of August after all the games have been played in the preseason. That whole division to me feels like it's going to be 9-8 or 8-9. Everyone in a division seems basically the same. Green Bay last year, 8-9 out of the playoffs. This would be the only one that I would look at as the same, Brian. That would be the only one that I would look at as potentially the same. I do think Green Bay at 5-1, if you can get that to win the NFC North, is pretty good because all these teams are pretty similarly talented, and that's just the bet on Jordan Love being good. And if Jordan Love is good, Green Bay winning 10 games, which I think would be enough to win a division, squarely in play.
I don't disagree with any of what you said, but I think Green Bay is worse overall. I know last year they didn't have a great record, but you've got, in my opinion, the most accurate passer in the history of the National Football League. Burrow's incredibly accurate. Herbert's accurate. Mahomes is. But nobody can drop it in the bucket like Aaron Rodgers. He is absolutely unbelievable. In terms of sidestepping in the pocket when there's pressure, him and Brady are the best I've ever seen. And now if you got Jordan Love, I don't know on what planet or what you've been drinking if you think the Green Bay Packers are better with Jordan Love.
Here's the thing. I'm just going off of last year. I don't think they're going to be better. They might end up with more wins because the rest of that division is weaker than it's been. And I know that may seem backwards to some, where Detroit is the strongest they've been going into a season in a very long time. The Bears have the worst record in the NFL. Minnesota, we expect regression, but you could, you know how this works sometimes in the NFL, Mal. You can end up with a better record with a worse team than you had the year before.
Yeah,
that
no
is
question,
something that
no
I
question.
Think is in play for Green Bay.
Well, that I don't disagree with you on. I'm just saying big picture-wise. You know, you got to go back 2 years. Last year they had a down year. There's no denying that. But overall,
one seed back-to-back years.
Yeah, overall, I still think that until we see Jordan Love show he's an elite player, it's hard to back it in this situation.
Who's next?
Fantastic. I love both of your explanations. I think they were perfect. So I'm going to go out of order here. So
it
let's
sounded
actually
so disingenuous, by the way.
I don't know. The attempt to suck up, and it didn't really sound
serious.
Like it.
No, serious. No, because I agree. So being a Packers owner.
Two times.
I had the same feeling when the Packers went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, although, you know, it's different situations, obviously. But I'm basically just like, show me I'm wrong is basically what it is with Jordan Love. So let's go with the Denver Broncos. They have a new head coach. Obviously, they were not very good last year with Russell Wilson, did not cook the way they wanted it to. Do you think that they will be better, worse, or the same this year?
So Denver is, to me, the one team in the AFC that I can't quite figure out going into the season of them all. I can't quite figure them out.
Yeah.
Because Sean Payton, I think Sean Payton made Drew Brees, not the other way around. I think part of the reason Brees is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Canton is because he had Sean Payton as his coach. Look what happened to him the year that Payton was suspended. They were an average offense that year. So I think Sean Payton comes in right away. He's a top three coach in the NFL. At least top five, I think top three. Russell Wilson was horrible last year. Absolutely, utterly horrendous in every aspect.
I object to one thing.
Which thing?
You saying Russell Wilson was horrible? That's insulting the word horrible.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I was trying to figure out where you were going with that.
I'm a huge Russell Wilson fan.
But when you have bottom four quarterback play like Denver did last year, you had a great defense. If they had an average offense, they're in the playoffs last year. Easily. Yep. They're in the playoffs with ease with an average offense. The question comes, there are two big questions here. Is Russell Wilson completely washed? And is Denver's defense able to still be a top 10 unit in the NFL? If the answer to the second question is yes, and the first one is no, Denver's going to be borderline playoffs to in the playoffs. But if the answer is no, yes to Russ being washed, or no, Denver can't be a top 10 defense and they're going to regress out, then there's no reason to think they won't be much better than they were a year ago.
I don't disagree with any of what you said. I think Sean Payton, maybe Shanahan is the better offensive play caller. I don't know. I think okay. Sean Payton, for my money, is as good as anybody in terms of coaching. He's right up there with anybody else anyone might select. I think he's tremendous. Here's the problem, though. I think Russell Wilson is done.
You think he's done?
I just don't see him being able to turn the corner because the problems were not just the inconsistency in terms of passing, but decision-making, inability to scramble away. You know, the one thing that Russ did so well for a long time in Seattle was maybe QB waggle left or right, and then you see an edge rusher coming, kind of either duck under them, step up, slide step, whatever was necessary. And here's another problem Denver has. They've got him signed up to a long-term deal. And it's a lot of money. I mean, if Russell Wilson doesn't work out right now, boy, this is really bad for them in terms of how they proceed going forward.
They are, again, of all the teams in the AFC, because to me, I'm all Indianapolis, Houston, and the Raiders mm-hmm. are the only three teams that I'm going to say do not have a shot of making the postseason
yeah.
in the AFC. Denver can go any which way.
Yeah.
If you told me Denver pushed Kansas City and ended up with the five seed in the AFC, You know what? I'd listen to that argument. Yeah. I would listen to that argument. And if you told me Denver went 6-11, I would say, you know what? That makes sense too. They are the, of all the AFC playoff caliber teams, they have the highest variance of anyone.
I would agree with you, but are they the kind of the wild card? And I don't mean literally wild card in terms of getting in the postseason, but the kind of the wild card or the outlier that could kind of.
Sure.
I tell you, for me, the team in the AFC is the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. They're another team because of uncertainty at the quarterback position.
Well, look, I've never been as big of a Deshaun Watson fan as other people have, but when I looked at the statistics, I think I'm wrong on him. I think he's an elite player. And Nick Chubb is probably the best running back in the NFL. If he's not one, he's probably 1A or, 1B, so he's right there. They've got some talent. That offensive line is solid. They've got a couple of good pieces defensively, Garrett, Denzel Ward. I don't know. I think the Browns are a dangerous, dangerous team. Let's put it this way. The Browns championship odds in the AFC are 22-1. I don't think that number is out of line in terms of them potentially making a push. They're in that ninth spot, if you look at it just overall, in terms of the odds for the AFC. They could be dangerous.
To me, the AFC North, I think all four teams, if everything goes right for their teams,
yeah,
you could make an argument for any of them to win that division.
Pittsburgh?
I'm done down Mike Tomlin.
That's fair.
Mean, it just, like, that team was awful last year, and they still almost made the playoffs.
I heard TJ Watt's going to start throwing passes because that's the best player.
When TJ Watt's healthy, their defense, is going to be a top five unit in the NFL.
It's funny. I'm a big Nick Bosa fan, but to me, when TJ Watt is fully healthy, he is the best edge rusher in football.
I don't even think it's close. I think just look at what Pittsburgh was with him and without him over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
They're top five defense with him. They're barely a top 15 defense without him.
Yeah.
The most impactful and the best. I think they go hand in hand on that. We're going to go to the Summer League next. Danielle Alvari, our very own Danielle Alvari, over at Thomas & Mack. Let her thoughts on the first half of the WNBA season and the NBA offseason as well next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up today. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Al Shaw alongside Cosmopolitan man himself, Brian Ortega, here as well. But now with us, live from our set over at Thomas & Mack Center at the NBA Summer League, she is the host of Bet the W here on VSIN. It is our very own Danielle Alvari with us right now. Danielle, how you doing today?
It's very hot in Vegas. It's very, yes, very hot.
Yes, it is. It's only going to get worse. Sunday, we might set a record for the hottest day in the city's history, which is kind of scary. Not going to lie on that. It's kind of frightening that could actually happen on Sunday. 120 would do the job on that. All right, Danielle, it's the All-Star break on the WNBA side of things. Look, when we've talked over the last few weeks, the Aces are just a dominant force. They're 19-2 heading into the All-Star break. You look at the futures, you're laying prices basically everywhere on the Aces to win it all. Right now, over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, they're minus 300, which is just a wild number midway through the season. Danielle, does anyone have a shot to realistically beat this team in a best-of-five series?
Well, like you said, they do have two losses, so two teams have managed to do it. But we were just talking about this on Hardwood Handicappers, how that was really a situation where the Aces were playing these road games and were so fatigued that they were really just on the end of these road stretches that these teams were able to catch them and actually do this. I think that Dallas, who is the team that most recently beat them, actually matched up very well with their size, with their speed, athleticism, the way that they can score. Dallas's defense is not going to match up as well, and we saw that in that very high-scoring game between them. But outside of that, we really talk about these top three, maybe four teams in the WNBA. I'd put Dallas around that 4 or 5 spot, probably the Mystics more like 5, but it's the Sun, the Liberty, and the Aces we're talking about. The Liberty are supposed to be, it was billed at the start of the season as the other super team in the league, and we haven't necessarily seen that come fully together. JVT was giving me a hard time because they have won 14 games and they have beat really good teams, and we've seen the Liberty and the Aces play already, but it was in a situation where the Liberty had this really bad travel day ahead of time. time. So I'm not sure if we've really gotten to see the full picture of what that could look like. But we are going to get to see it in the WNBA Commissioner's Cup game because it is going to be the Liberty and the Aces. It's very top heavy this year in the WNBA, as you mentioned. And the Aces are rightfully so. I mean, they returned just about everything from last year. Nothing got worse for the Aces. No category. They only improved. And it's to the point where now you're seeing win totals up for mid part of the season. And the Aces are at 35.5 for a 40-game season. It's insane.
It's a crazy number there, Danielle, you mentioned, but I'll tell you what, from a betting standpoint, I don't know if there's a better team in sports to bet than the Las Vegas Aces. Last night against the Sparks, they're laying 12.5. I thought the number was short because the Sparks are a terrible team. They lost 5 in a row coming in. And the Vegas Aces, they lead at the end of the first quarter, I think by like 16 points. They never, ever relinquish the margin of the spread. They're up 17, actually, at the end of one. From a betting standpoint, is there anybody in your opinion that is even worth taking a flyer on? I know you mentioned the Liberty, but I don't really see it in a finals matchup that they can beat them. And yeah, exactly, right? But right now the Aces are sitting at minus $2 and Liberty are only plus 265.
Yeah, I mean, again, like we talked about, the longer shots, the teams that I just can't even possibly get into the realm of possibility are the Dream and below, pretty much. The Sparks looked like they had a shot this year, but they've just had so many injuries. I thought the addition of Kurt Miller at head coach was going to be a big deal and a big change for this team. They looked good out of the gate, and then they've just had injury after injury, and they've just not been able to put it together. The Fever, huge step forward, more like a sixth-place team instead of a last-place team this year, but not a championship-winning team. The Dream, again, steps forward, more in the middle of the pack as opposed to the bottom of the pack. We have the Storm and the Mercury very much sitting at the bottom and just holding comfortable there. But as far as odds here, I mean, you have the Sun at 16-1, which is about around what you could get them before the season just tipped off. The Mystics were closer to 17-1. Now you're getting them at 22-1. I haven't seen anything from the Mystics that inspires me to think that they're going to be able to turn around this second half of the season. What's happened to them almost is similar to what we saw with the Aces last year, which the Aces still were able to go and win the championship, but they don't really have a bench. And so they're dealing with these injuries right now. Elena Deladon is out for 2 weeks. Shakira Austin has been out for a couple weeks and is out for a few more weeks with a hip strain. And they also have been battling issues with ankles with Natasha Cloud. So ankle injury after ankle injury for this team. So I can't really factor the Mystics in either. It's those top three teams, and really you're only getting a decent price on the Sun.
Yeah, to me right now, you mentioned some of the other teams, and I agree with your assessment. The league is a little bit top heavy with a couple of teams. I don't know. I think even still for me, guys, I would look at betting the Aces at minus $2. There's nobody that's going to stand in their way. And now the fact that they've gone away from the single elimination in the first round of the playoffs helps a team like Las Vegas immensely, Danielle. I just don't see somebody beating them 2 out of 3. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you look at the stats, when you look at this team in terms of what they're able to do, it's a joke that they're so dominant. It's not just Young. It's not just Plum. It's like, Wilson, okay, you're going to get 25 tonight? No problem. You'll go get – I mean, it's like they're so talented. They are just better than everybody else, and it's not even close.
Yeah, this was a stat that was in one of the articles I just wrote for the last games on Wednesday before the All-Star break. But the Aces played Tuesday night, recorded their fifth win this season by 24 or more points. It was against the Mercury. According to ESPN Stats and Info, the rest of the WNBA has two of these wins. The Aces plus 305 point differential, best through 20 games in WNBA history. This is just a historically good team.
Danielle Alvari with us right now, a host of Bet the W here on VSiN. Danielle, All-Star weekend, the best betting opportunity of the year the last few years was betting Allie Quigley to win the WNBA three-point contest. That's not happening this year because she's obviously not in the contest this year. Sabrina Ionescu of the Liberty favored right now, plus 280. Jackie Young, plus 350. Sammy Whitcomb, I should say, plus 450. Kelsey Mitchell, plus 450. Carrington at 6-1, and Enrique Agumbalale at 6-1 as well. I think the favorite Ionescu is the bet here, but is there anyone else you would possibly look at in that market?
I don't know. If we're talking accuracy, it's Jackie Young for me. She's got the best three-point percentage in the league this year. She's taken a huge step forward where she's, you know, one of these top two scorers for this Aces team when last year that was not so much her role. So really great surge forward for her this year. I think Sabrina Ionescu is a name that a lot of people know, and they know her for her three-point shooting. She's had a lot of success. She's made the most threes, really, so far this year. But I look at accuracy, and maybe that's a little bit more favored in terms of Jackie Young. So Sabrina's been in this contest before, I believe, so at least there's a little bit of advantage there. But like you said, it is kind of sad for anybody competing because nobody, any year that Allie Quigley was competing, she won it. So are you really the best? We know it's Allie. It's still Allie, even though she's not playing this year.
Danielle is the best betting opportunity this summer. I mean, it was just year after year, year after year. It was just automatic money.
Yeah.
And then now Quigley not in this, as we know. Danielle, do you bet the All-Star game at all or just let it be?
I do. Okay. I do usually. I like to live bet this one. I'm sure you remember in 2021 there was that historic win total debacle where a total was hung that was very high for this game and everybody slammed the under. So we did not get that situation this year. But still, I feel like they've started to realize that this is a game that the players are going to want to show off a little bit more. So maybe we see these higher scoring situations. But I think that Team Wilson, Asia Wilson's team, is appropriately favored in this spot ever so slightly. But it could be a close enough game where if you're getting, I see that the number is at 4.5 in some spots, 5.5 in others. I'm going to look more at this tonight. There's going to be a Bet the W podcast where I break more of this down. But right now I'm thinking, I think that Asia's team should be favored, but maybe you take the points with Breonna Stewart's team.
I just want to go back to the three-point shootout. Look, for me, it's Jackie Young. You get a better price.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like she's only shooting 49%, so I don't know what is wrong with her, I mean, from beyond the three-point line. But here's more importantly, it's not like, Danielle, we're talking about one out of two three-point attempts. Okay. Like, she's shooting 5, 6, 7 three-point shots a game. This is not just, you know, sometimes you see some outlier stats, and they're very misleading based on what it's seen. And not taking anything away from Sabrina, she's a tremendous player. But I just think when you're looking at this situation, the way she's performed, to me, I would take the better price with Young and take a shot there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, speaking even further to that, true shooting percentage for Jackie Young right now, 69.7, insanity, second best in the league. So I think Jackie Young's a good price here relative to, I mean, she should be the short shot in my opinion.
Again, right now at DraftKings, Jackie Young plus 350, your second favorite in the WNBA three-point contest. That is tomorrow at 7 o'clock Eastern over at Mandalay Bay. Danielle, before we let you go, just some quick things on the NBA. Do you think Damian Lillard is going to be a Blazer when the season starts, or do you think a deal gets done before the season gets rolling?
I think he's going to be a Blazer. They have no obligation to trade him. So it's, like I said, this really interesting era of where these players are demanding trades. And I don't know that they're going to necessarily be happy with what they get.
Right now at DraftKings, Damian Lillard minus 270 to play his next minute with the Miami Heat. You can still almost get 5-1 on Portland at plus 475. Again, she's Danielle Alvari on the tweets at her name, Danielle Alvari. Bet the W podcast, the name of her show. Danielle, one coming out for All-Star festivities tomorrow. So be on the lookout for that. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Coming up next here on Sharp Money, you know, we're going back to the NFL. We only got through two teams in the last segment with Ortega. So we're going to go better, worse, or the same. A little bit more on the other side. Sharp Money, VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. Amal Shaw's alongside Ortega's here as well in for Dustin Sweetelson. And now with us, the sports betting Hall of Famer himself. I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
Where have you been? You
mostly
had the longest honeymoon ever.
Now, well, yes, but I was mostly at summer, mostly at Circa now.
So I told you the way to, you know, again, newlywed. Just remember this. I'm married 36 years. Every day is a honeymoon, honey. Just that'll get you through. Trust me when I tell you. It's the safest play you're going to make.
By the way, I'm hoping Mrs. M is watching. By the way, didn't you say 37 during the break?
I probably did, but it's 36, 37. But then once you get past 30, you got to pass. It's like you could start naming, you know, just don't go below 30. It's a very fluid number.
That voice is, of course, Vinny Maliulo with us right now.
Mama loves Mrs. M. She loves him. I got to tell you.
Vinny, so there's no events today. So
NBA Summer League.
Okay.
A lot here in town.
Other than the Summer League.
Yeah,
that's the only thing going on, which begs the question, why are you working today?
Well, there's always something to do, right? I mean, usually you have to be at Chris Andrews on vacation. I think he'll be back this weekend. But there's always something to do. You know, you bring up a good point. By now, I'd be scoping out workouts at Del Mar, which starts a week from tomorrow. Of course, Saratoga started today. But you want to get ahead of things and keep track of any other free agent signings. Look at futures. Try to handicap. Try to get a handle on who's going to be a seller and who's going to be buyers at the trade deadline for baseball, right? And the reason we would do that on our side of the counter is to try to gauge how we're going to offset liability on some teams like the Orioles, like the Reds. I mean, they're obviously playoff contenders. So I know when Chrissy gets back, we'll work on some games of the year and things like that and some other props. So there's always something to do. I mean, it's mainly look-ahead mode, though.
And right now it's kind of a slow time, obviously, as Jeff just alluded mm-hmm. to. You got a great Joe Louis-related story, and I say that because it's not actually Joe Louis, but a story that took place at Caesars Palace. You were at Caesars for a long time.
Yeah.
Kind of enlighten people with this story here with the Joe Louis story.
So I know, Amal, this will be a bit redundant to you, but being that you brought it up, you must have enjoyed it.
I did.
So Joe Louis, legendary boxer, arguably the greatest of all time. You can make a case for it. And Joe Louis actually worked at Caesar's Palace in the latter part of his life. He was a greeter.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
And in fact, he was his wake was at Caesar's Palace in the pavilion that was out back. There was a pavilion out back. It's no longer there at Caesar's Palace. There was a pavilion out back where when we did have a major fight, sometimes the fights took place in the pavilion, held several thousand people, but that's where the workouts took place, and Joe Louis was laid to rest there. Well, as a tribute to Joe Louis and his time, particularly at Caesar's Palace, there was a marble statue created, and it stood it was placed in the sports book, solid marble,
yeah,
right, life size, had to weigh a ton. In fact, we couldn't just move it during renovations. We had to make sure that it was over a portion of the property that had a slab and not a basement for fear of it literally, creating a hole and falling through. So, in fact, now, Brian Ortega, you said you recently saw the stat. It's moved since I was there. I left there quite a while.
I think it moved over near, the nightclub area. There's, a pillar. And okay. They put it in front of the pillar because it used to be in front of Bobby.
So Bates. Several stories about Joe Louis, the statue. And again, a nice man, too. Got to meet him. What a gentleman. The Joe Louis record has an asterisk next to it, as far as I'm concerned, right? Parlay, I know you're looking up Joe Louis record. Pull it up there, and you can let the folks know what it is. And I can tell you that as we speak, it has the... it is subject to change. Now, what would happen is, at the time when I was there, the statue was posed where Joe's in his boxing stance, and he had his his left hand extended, and people would take pictures with the statue, okay, all the time. Well, every now and then, especially during when we had a fight at Caesar's Palace, people would start to spar with the solid marble statue.
Guys
would
try. Always a smart thing to do.
Oh, brilliant! Right, I saw guys break their hand on a body shot. I took a jab. One guy tried. He was trying to be like it was the 15th round. Because I asked him after, right? Because he touched gloves. They touch gloves in the 15th round. Going at the time, 15th round. Now the 12th round. He goes up like this, and he's like, ah. So I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? He goes, well, I was making a sportsman gesture. Yeah, how's your hand feel? So we had I think it was the first Chavez de la Hoya fight, and there was a couple of guys out there, and I'm at the counter, and I'm looking, and I see a guy, he's got his arm around the champ, and his buddy's taking a picture of him, and he's smiling, and So now the guy in the picture turns and he starts to shadow box with the Joe Louis
statue. The marble statue, yeah.
Right? And not only is he just kind of throwing punches, but he's bobbing and weaving, right? Well, he bobs down one time. He comes straight up. Joe's extended glove catches him right on the top of the head.
See you later.
Bam, down he goes. He's down.
Down for the count.
Down, out, immediately. This guy is down. Knees buckle. He's sprawled out. You got to picture this. This is the night of a fight. We got 16,000 people going to the arena outside. This guy's laid out, and his buddy is hysterical laughing. Okay? He's got the little 110. Remember the old 110 cameras, the little thin cameras? This buddy is cracking up, and they were both Hispanic. And the reason I noticed is because I know the guy is out. His buddy thinks he's kidding. I said, call security, get the paramedics up here. I go out, and his buddy is laying. He goes, and his buddy now starts playing referee, and he's counting them out. Seis, siete. Oh. He's counting them out, right? And then now the guy's still laying. He's out completely. He is like, now his buddy's, he's going, Juan, what? What? He gets down to, and he's trying to revive. He's complete. I mean, he's now. I'm like, oh, this is not. So here come the paramedics. Now the guy's coming too. They give him the smelling salt and everything like that. So I go home that night. And there was a local place here in town where after the fights, all bookmakers and reporters would get together and just, you know, kind of reminisce and recount the night. So I'm telling the story. Great writer. For years here in Las Vegas. He still writes. He freelances. He was writing for the Las Vegas Review Journal at the time. John L. Smith. He hears the story. He dies laughing. A couple of days later in the RJ, here's the headline. Brown Bomber still K-wing the Palookas. So, in fact, Dan Chandler was a legendary host here in town. Dan Chandler, son of former Kentucky Governor Happy Chandler. I worked with him at Caesars. He was a great host. What a terrific, terrific casino guy. And he heard the story, and I think he put it in his book.
It's an old timer.
So, I mean, it's gotten so much mileage. Parlay, what do you see? What do they have? What's printed, please, for the
printed
for the record?
Joe Louis record is 66-3, 52 wins by knockout.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. That's 66, bet the over, all right? And the same with the KOs, because Joe's still knocking them out right now to this day. Now, obviously, there's not as many great fights there and everything like that, but it was every time there was a fight, but there would always be something. And you think, like,
what is wrong with people?
And so another time, what we eventually had to do was because it was – again, you want to take pictures, that's one thing, but for your own safety, just it's solid marble. What do you think? So we put the felt ropes up around it, okay? It didn't matter.
Oh, of course.
I mean, I told one, because people would just go underneath or move the ropes. I'm like, what do you think? The ropes are there to keep Joe in? Like, what are you doing? Like,
Hey, Vinny, I have a quick question for you before you run off here. So can you explain to people what fight night in Vegas used to be like for boxing? Because it's not quite the same like it used to be, but just what the feeling was like. Because my dad always, I used to work boxing events, like when I used to be a concierge. He's like, oh, are you excited to be there? I'm like, no, because it's just not, it's not that fun. But what do you, what
you know, right? And again, I'm not going to take away from anything that that anybody does today, right? Everybody puts their best efforts into it. UFC, you know, exciting cards and everything. But I've got to tell you, there were just, it was a special time because if it wasn't the heavyweights, it was the middleweights and the welterweights that were, I mean, there's a great documentary that ESPN did, Four Kings, right? Yeah. And, you know, talked about Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, and Roberto Duran. If you haven't seen it, I've got a couple of stories about those fights too. But the thing about it was Las Vegas, it made Las Vegas the center of the sports world at that time because for the fight. And the energy not only transcended the property, in our case at Caesars, it transcended the city. You would get in a cab, wherever you were, a restaurant, it didn't matter. I mean, it was just phenomenal.
Still the best sporting event I've ever been to, 97 Tyson Holyfield at the MGM Grand. First of all, there's nothing like when you get the intro and you're like, MGM Grand Garden Arena. I'm going to tell you, Brian, there was a electricity that was palpable in there. And by the way, the best part was, I remember a friend of mine, there was 12 of us, and he sees Terry Porter walking by. He goes, Terry Porter, he's like, he was so excited somebody actually recognized him.
Yep. Vinny, pleasure as always.
We'll do some more.